I'm Tara Merchant. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, firing back, the markets react after China unveils new retaliatory tariffs against the United States. We're at the White House. Recovery update. The Vatican provides the latest on the health of the Holy Father. EWTN's Frank Rocha joins us with the details. Plus, Faith and Family, a conference in Hungary shows why family is the basis for survival. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump posts words of encouragement on Truth Social, writing, "Great job numbers, far better than expected. It's already working. Hang tough. We can't lose." But at the same time, the markets take another beating, the Dow ending in correction and the Nasdaq landing in bear market. All this in response to Trump's new tariffs, and now China hits back. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
That's right, Tara. Good evening to you. China indeed has hit right back pretty hard, imposing a 34% tariff on the United States. That kicks in next week, April 10th, as the trade war heats up.
China, first row. China, 67%. That's tariffs charged to the USA, including currency manipulation and trade barriers.
2 days after President Donald Trump lays out his tariff numbers, China matches President Trump's big raise in tariffs in an escalating trade war. On Truth Social this morning, President Trump posting, "China played it wrong. They panicked. The one thing they cannot afford to do." On Air Force One Thursday, President Trump telling reporters,
"And those tariffs have come in, and every country's called us. That's the beauty of what we do. We put ourselves in the driver's seat."
The president saying patience will pay off.
"I think our markets are going to boom. We've got to give it a little chance, but we're taking in jobs and we're taking in industry and we're taking in trillions of dollars. I think our markets are going to boom. We've got to give it a little bit of time."
Meanwhile, U.S. Fed Chair Jerome Powell speaking today in Arlington, Virginia, commenting on the predicted future impact.
"Looking ahead, higher tariffs will be working their way through our economy and are likely to raise inflation in coming quarters."
On social media, Trump posting, "This would be a perfect time for Fed Chairman Jerome Powell to cut interest rates. Cut interest rates, Jerome, and stop playing politics." The president and CEO of Footwear Distributors and Retailers of America says he's very concerned about the trade war.
"As tariffs are put in place, it drives up prices, drives down consumer behavior, drives down GDP, leads to job loss, and then the party in power usually is thrown out very quickly."
On the jobs front, U.S. employers added 228,000 jobs last month, nearly double what economists had expected. The White House press secretary writing, "The economy is starting to roar, and the golden age of America is on its way."
At the closing bell, the Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P 500 all finished down, roughly, I should say, all around, well above 5%, close to 6%. And earlier, President Trump posted on social media that Vietnam wants to cut their tariffs down to zero if an agreement can happen. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
President Trump is keeping TikTok available for another 75 days while his administration takes time to broker a deal for the app. Congress has mandated that the app be sold or shut down. Well, TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, insists the platform is not for sale. Multiple bidders have come forward, including Amazon. President Trump spoke about the issue on Air Force One en route to Florida, saying his new tariffs on China could be a new tactic in getting a deal done.
"We have a situation with TikTok where China will probably say, we'll approve a deal, but will you do something on the tariff? The tariffs give us great power to negotiate."
And the TikTok ban was signed into law last year on national security grounds. The president says his administration looks forward to working with TikTok and China to close a deal. National Public Radio and Public Broadcasting are under scrutiny tonight, with some Republicans saying there is no reason for the government to continue funding them. At a hearing last week, GOP lawmakers led by Marjorie Taylor Greene chastised the leaders of both organizations for what they insist is partisan programming. So what would happen if funding is cut off? Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has the latest.
Good evening, Tara. In the words of Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, you can all hate us on your own dime. House Republicans are putting public broadcasting on notice. They've introduced a bill called the No Propaganda Act to end all government support, starting with the $535 million Congress has already approved for this year. Lawmakers tell me the real issue is whether any government money should be used to support independent journalism.
At a minimum, we're going to eliminate their funding, and hopefully we can eliminate the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and PBS and NPR, their reporting as well, and see that it is very biased.
PBS's Paula Kerger says she is proud of the coverage her network offers, but adds, quote, "This could be a perfect storm. That's why this moment does feel different. It feels as if this is a time that we really do need to step up and make as clear a case as possible." Some established media are rallying behind them. The National Press Club issued a statement complimenting the outlets as, quote, "high-quality, unbiased networks." Democrats add they're vital. For instance, figures show more than 1,000 NPR stations collectively reach 43 million listeners each week.
The public broadcasting system, NPR, is absolutely vital in communities across our country, especially rural communities that are very dependent upon that programming, that information.
The decision to attack Big Bird and the Cookie Monster, I mean, it's just a strange thing.
Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn has another idea. She's sponsoring legislation to move these media organizations to a nonprofit status.
If we're there tapering off from federal funds and then they're running on a nonprofit status, I think that is something that would suit a lot of communities. It is something that I think the taxpayer would appreciate.
President Trump is on board with efforts to cut funding for public media. He called NPR, quote, "a liberal disinformation machine." Congress hopes to get something done soon and may include it in the massive bill Republicans are currently working on to put President Trump's agenda into action. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Eric, thank you. Well, EWTN News has learned today that disgraced former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick has died. The former Archbishop of Washington, D.C. was laicized in 2019 after a Vatican investigation found him guilty of sexual misconduct involving both adults and children. As of right now, the cause of death is not known. McCarrick was 94 years old. The news was confirmed by current Archbishop of Washington, Cardinal Robert McElroy, who said in part, quote, "Today, I learned of the death of Theodore McCarrick, former Archbishop of Washington. At this moment, I am especially mindful of those who he harmed during the course of his priestly ministry. Through their enduring pain, may we remain steadfast in our prayers for them and for all victims of sexual abuse." Well, the South and Midwestern regions of the United States are under severe weather warnings tonight following a series of tornadoes and torrential rainstorms passing through the Midwest already this week. As recovery efforts continue, the National Weather Service is warning of life-threatening flash flooding as more rain and wind are expected through Saturday. Landslides, flooded highways and decimated homes are just a fraction of the damage so far, with at least seven people reported dead. In South Korea, celebration in the streets after the country's constitutional court removes President Yoon Suk-yeol from office. President Yoon declared martial law in December soon after he lifted it, but was impeached for the move. Though many celebrate today's decision, many others criticize it, highlighting a deep political division in South Korea. Now the country must elect a new president within 60 days. Israeli airstrikes leave at least 17 dead after hitting the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis. Meanwhile, in the north of Gaza, Israeli operations are expanding with more ground troops. Israel's ground expansions are part of their efforts to establish a new security corridor across Gaza. This comes as the Hamas-run health ministry reports 27 dead from an Israeli airstrike on a school in northern Gaza. Israel says it was targeting prominent terrorists and has also reported killing a top Hamas commander in Lebanon. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly. Heartbreak in Kansas. A priest shot at his parish rectory is dead. Details on the case and who was arrested. And new information today on the health of Pope Francis. The encouraging signs coming from the Vatican. A Catholic priest has been shot and killed at his parish rectory in Kansas. A Facebook post from Saints Peter and Paul Catholic Church says Father Arul Karasala was shot and died shortly afterward at the local hospital. The post adds that a suspected shooter is reportedly in custody. Originally from India, Father Karasala was the parish pastor since 2011. In a statement, Archbishop Joseph Nauman of the Archdiocese of Kansas City says in part, quote, his love for Christ and his church was evident in how he ministered to his people with great generosity and care. His parishioners, friends, and brother priests will deeply miss him. Additionally, Archbishop Nauman celebrated Mass in Father Karsala's memory. The Archbishop says he considered the priest to be a great example of heroic love. Democrats are responding tonight after the Trump administration freezes millions of dollars allocated in part for Planned Parenthood. 150 House Democrats signed a letter to the Department of Health and Human Services calling for that freeze to be lifted. Earlier this week, the Trump administration confirmed that it was holding more than $20 million from Planned Parenthood. Driven by issues of racism and a perceived lack of inclusivity has led to the decline in the number of Black Catholics in the U.S., with nearly half of those raised Catholic no longer identifying as such. One of the USCCB's mission directives for 2025 to 2028 will, quote, prioritize the work of the conference to help equip bishops, clergy, religious, and the laity in evangelizing those who are religiously unaffiliated or disaffiliated from the church, with special focus on young adults and the youth. So to that end, an event this weekend in Birmingham will try to address some of these issues experienced by Black Catholics. A listening session will explore how the church can better support the needs of Black Catholics. And here to discuss it, Brent Patterson of Our Lady of Fatima Parish in Birmingham and Dr. Ansel Augustine, Assistant Director of African American Affairs for the USCCB. Gentlemen, thank you for being here. Tell me about this session and what you see are the key issues facing Black Catholics. Brent, we'll start with you.
Well, you know, this session right here is to bring everyone together that's in the community to talk and address several issues that's been going on. As far as, for one, we have a lot of young adults that are leaving the church right now, and we don't understand why, what is going on. And we're having churches close locally. So our deal is, you know, we want to fix this problem. And we don't want any more disunity. We want to bring everyone together, and together in Christ. Christ isn't divided. So we also need to stay together, strong and united as Catholics.
Obviously a very important issue. Dr. Augustine, the USCCB has called for greater inclusivity within the church. How do you think events like this can help address the concerns of Black Catholics and foster a more welcoming environment?
Amen. Well, thank you for having me. And the focus, as Brent mentioned, is young adults, ages 18 to 40, the demographic that seems to be missing in a lot of places in the church. And so we had this initial gathering in 2023 in New Orleans, and came out with a report where the young adults that were listened to shared their challenges and their experiences of what they needed from the church and what they're willing to offer the church. And so various organizations like the organizations that are helping sponsor this gathering have come together to have these regional listening sessions. So Birmingham offered themselves to gather their young adults to have a connection between the young adults here regionally, along with the clergy and leadership, to have a dialogue on how they can better work together to reach those that they are not able to reach right now.
You know, also based on the USCCB's work and the findings, what do you believe are the most important steps the church can take to reverse the trend of Black Catholics leaving the faith?
I think what we do in the model of what Pope Francis has done with the Synod is creating safe spaces where people can share their challenges and share their joys and be listened to and felt heard, and thus creating the sense of trust and collaboration in that space and place.
Right. And so, again, Brent, the event is called Where Do I Fit In? Birmingham Black Catholic Young Adult Listening Session. No doubt you are both hoping this event will lead to more outreach overall. So how do you think that will work? And are you expecting a countrywide response as this spreads?
Well, we're hoping, for one, when we bring these young adults and everyone into this safe space, that they'll go out and tell everyone else, hey, we actually had a safe space where we felt comfortable expressing how we felt, as well as we were heard. And then we take this from Birmingham, maybe to D.C., and then from D.C. nationally, and just bring the nation together, you know, all walks of life, not only just the Black Catholic Church, but all Catholic churches. We must be united at this point in time.
Well, I hope you guys have a great event, and hopefully the word spreads and everything gets better. Well, Brent Patterson and Dr. Ansel Augustine, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having us here.
All right, up next on EWTN News Nightly, encouraging signs. A health update on Pope Francis from EWTN's very own Frank Rocha. Plus, worldwide birth rates are plummeting, but there are those trying to reverse the trend. We'll have a report. Some good news. The Vatican says Pope Francis is showing more improvements as he recovers from his double pneumonia at his residence. This comes with Holy Week coming right around the corner and questions remaining about the Holy Father's participation. Joining us now from Rome is Frank Rocha, senior Vatican analyst for EWTN News. Frank, it's been almost 2 weeks since Pope Francis left the hospital. What are his doctors in the Vatican saying about his health now?
Well, last weekend, Dr. Sergio Alfieri, who coordinated the treatment of the Pope in the Gemelli Hospital, said he was making a remarkable recovery, very surprising, and he predicted that the Pope would regain at least 90% of the state of his health that he had before he went into the hospital, maybe even 100%. So that's remarkably optimistic. And then on Tuesday, and then again today on Friday, the Vatican gave us some health updates and said that the Pope is continuing making slight improvements in his mobility and his breathing and his speaking, because we remember he lost a lot of his ability to speak, but he's working. He's sitting up at his desk. He's concelebrating the Mass every day in the chapel there on the second floor of Santa Marta, where he lives in the Vatican guest house. So it's progress, slow and steady.
Yeah, that's amazing. Has the Vatican given any indication on whether or not the Pope will participate in the upcoming Holy Week and Easter celebrations?
Well, no, they continue to say it's too early to discuss that. But there are a couple of signs that are encouraging. One is that they said that the Angelus this week may take a slightly different form than it has in the previous weeks, which sounds like they're hinting that he might appear in some way. Maybe he'll appear at the window, maybe there'll be a video or something, but they're going to tell us more tomorrow. They didn't. And also, on Sunday, the Archbishop who celebrates the Mass for the Jubilee of the Sick will be reading a homily prepared by Pope Francis that he won't deliver himself. But so that might be another way we might imagine that he'll participate in Holy Week and Easter, is by writing the homilies, but even if he won't deliver them himself.
It sounds like there's some really good science here. You know, on another topic, we also understand that the Vatican's foreign minister, Archbishop Paul Gallagher, spoke on the phone today with his Russian counterpart about the war in Ukraine. What can you tell us about that conversation?
Well, as far as I know, we don't have a readout from the Russian side, but what the Vatican said was that they talked about, the war in Ukraine, and talked about how to reduce the military conflict there, which of course has been the Pope's aim since the beginning of the war. They also talked about the Vatican's openness and willingness to pursue humanitarian work, especially particularly in the facilitating prisoner exchanges between the two sides. And there was also an intriguing note at the end. It said that they talked about the situation of the Catholic Church in Russia. It didn't elaborate. We know that the situation of the Catholic Church in Russia is a bit precarious or at least uncomfortable there. The Orthodox Church and the state have never been very, have always been kind of wary of the Catholic Church. There are maybe close to a million Catholics in Russia. And we know that that might be one of the factors that the Pope has always been kind of conciliatory and very careful in his approach to Russia, even during the Ukraine war. So that remains to be seen more and more detail about that.
All right, Frank, we appreciate those updates. Frank Rocha, senior Vatican analyst for EWTN News. And finally tonight, birth rates are plummeting worldwide, according to a groundbreaking report in the Lancet Medical Journal. Last year, most countries are now below replacement rate. That's 2.1 children per woman, enough to replace the existing population with a bit of a buffer. In Hungary, public intellectuals and policymakers gathered for a two-day international conference to explore innovative solutions aimed at strengthening family life. Domonkos Pulai from Hungary reports.
Family is the basis for the survival of our nation.
That is Hungary's Minister for Culture and Innovation, Balázs Hankó, citing the country's constitution at the Family Formation and the Future Conference, hosted by the Hungarian think tank the Danube Institute in Budapest earlier this week, focusing on the geopolitical, cultural, and legal dimensions of demographic change.
We need strong families, and because we have strong families, it means that we will have a strong nation. And we need a strong Europe and a strong America.
As fertility rates continue to decline in many developed countries, Hungary is drawing international attention with its family-oriented policies. In Budapest, experts and policymakers from around the world have gathered to discuss how supporting families today can address long-term demographic challenges.
Hungary has really been on the forefront of the national and global discussion about declining birth rates. And they're the first country that has really put their money where their mouth is, to put it simply, willing to invest large policies focused on increasing the birth rate.
Emma Waters, a researcher at the Heritage Foundation, traveled from the United States to attend the conference and discuss the similarities and differences in the demographic landscapes of Hungary and the U.S.
What's been so interesting in the Hungarian context is that their outcomes have actually boosted marriage and reduced abortions by very notable margins. And yet the long-term impact on how on the birth rates, I still think is like left to be seen. In the United States, there's been less of a focus on like very precise federal policies and more of an emphasis on providing parents with the freedom and flexibility that they need to have the children they want. EWTN.
Among many topics, the conference also emphasized the importance of beauty, a subject often dismissed as secondary to politics, economics, and policy, which, according to Ashley and John Norona, professors at the Pontifical University of Rome, plays a vital role in shaping both society and the church.
When we're talking about human flourishing, and as well as how do we create a family that flourishes, well, one way is to help all members of a family understand that it's that through beauty, not only do we get to have this moment of experiencing God himself, who is authentic beauty, but also it's an opportunity for us who, in our own unique way, are artists of sorts. We're artists because we've been given this canvas, and the canvas is our lives.
Catholic morality is universal, so one can say it's not good only because it's taught by the Catholic Church, but it is good because the Catholic Church is the foremost expert on what helps human flourishing, because we base all our moral principles on two things: the dignity of the human person and human nature.
The central focus of the two-day conference revolved around the key question: what kind of future do we want for our children, and what role must the family play in securing it?
Children live what they learn. If you're, as a child, growing up where family is the norm, then you'll emulate that as you grow. And having a stable family is the bedrock of civilized society.
Melissa O'Sullivan is the deputy director of the Danube Institute. She believes that if governments prioritize funding technology and innovation, they should also invest in families to help build a better future for the next generations.
We subsidize all kinds of things through our public policy efforts in all the governments. We subsidize, one mentioned, electronic vehicles. Why wouldn't we subsidize family?
While there are encouraging signs of progress in family policy in both Hungary and the United States, Only time will tell whether political, economic, or cultural incentives can truly reverse the ongoing decline in marriage and family life that drives the broader demographic crisis. In Budapest, Hungary, Domonka Spulai, EWTN News Nightly.
Important issue and lots to ponder. Well, we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I am Tara Mergener. Good night and God bless.